Okay, dear friends in Dhamma, so we were discussing Hemavata Sutta. Hemavata Sutta is from Sutta Nipata. Sutta Nipata is again from the Kuddaka Nikaya. Actually, Sutta Nipata carries very interesting series of suttas like Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. Many, many interesting suttas are there. And Hemavata Sutta is also coming under that. Now, this is a kind of a discussion, and first we can understand happen in the between two yakkas or the generals of yakkas, we can say. And that is, they are called Hemavata and Satagira. Now, we understood through the commentary that both of them were monks during the Buddha Kassapa, and due to some reason, they have become yakkas, and later Satagira actually came to know about the Gautama Buddha, and he understood, okay, now Gautama Buddha has arisen in the world, and he has now fair amount of faith about him, and now he is suggesting Hemavata also to join with him to go and see the Buddha. So at that time, Hemavata was not sure about it, and he is asking a series of questions. And then Satagira is answering all those questions. And we went through that. And then later, they both agreed and went to meet the Buddha. And then they asked the question, basically Hemavata asked question from Buddha, how this world has arisen and due to what this whole world become somewhat afflicted. So likewise, he started asking questions, and Buddha start giving the answers, mentioning that this world is nothing but the six sense bases and the external sense bases. That is what we call as the world. And when one is clung to these six, then they become hindered, they become troubled. Then that is how they become afflicted. So likewise, there are various questions they start asking. And now we have discussed some of those questions. And today actually we probably would be able to finish this sutta. And probably I think we have stopped maybe somewhere here, or we can start a little bit earlier. Ko suddha tarati yogam ko dha tarati annavam apatitte analambe ko gambhire nasidati. So we discussed like last time, so he is asking this whole ocean, whole flood of the defilements, who is going to cross, who is not going to sink in this this flood. Then Buddha mentioned sabbada sila sampanno, the one who is constantly maintained the virtues, panyava susamahito, the one who is endowed with wisdom, and again who is with clarity of the mind, collectedness of the mind, susamahito, ajjatta chinti satima, and his attention is fairly introvert, not always going outward, rather he is fairly being with himself. He has a fair concern about how what's going on right now and here. Here I am. Here what is going on. How my mind works. How my body works. And even my part we can remove. How this body works. How this mind works. So likewise his attention is fairly introvert. Satima. And he is ever mindful. Ogan tharati duttaram. And he is the person who is crossing this flood, which is difficult to cross. Viratoko kama sanyaya sabba sanyojana tiku, the one who has completely abandoned all different kinds of sense perceptions, various signs, various stains related to this different kinds of sense cords. That means sight, sound, smells, taste, tangibles. So they produce a fair amount of signs in our mind. Suppose that we are watching news. So after watching the news, probably you might have switched off the TV, but certain things probably you can still remember. Certain sights again and again come to your mind. So they have somehow occupied your mind. So likewise, there may be someone who irritates you, who blames you. And that is simply a sound. But later, even when you came back home, still those sounds, those words keep coming to the mind. And different sounds, basically that means signs of sounds, saddha sanya. And similarly, there may be some beautiful fragrances which can stay or occupy in our mind. There may be delicious states which can occupy our mind. Various tangibles which can occupy our mind. So we are imagining about them. We are remembering those, say, contact. Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, contacts. So we are imagining, we are again and again reliving them. So that indicates that these sights, these sounds, these smells, even though they are not currently available, they have sort of left a certain amount of sediment, kind of a stain, kind of a mark in our mind. But here, sabbada sila sampanno panyamasu samahito ajjatta chinti satima ogantarati duttaram virato kama sanyaya. Now this person, virato, he doesn't have that sort of sensual perception, sensual signs, marks. His mind is very clear, very clean, purified. Sabba sangyojana tiko, he has overcome all the fetters. Nandi bhava parikkino. So that means, now if we consider our mind, constantly we are looking forward, anticipating various things going to happen in the future. We are trying to imagine, we are trying to fantasize. Currently it is not happen, but tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe next month, next year. So likewise, we have kind of an inclined mind towards the future based on some sort of a delight, some sort of a satisfaction, gratification. But here, nandi bhava parikkino, so that sort of a becoming process, fairly coupled with some delight, has completely abandoned, has completely faded off. So gambhire nasidati, such person does not sink into the deep sea of the, say, defilements. So this is a very different or very interesting way how Buddha takes very interesting similes and explain Dhamma, connecting with those similes, so that adding some kind of an aesthetic aspect to his Dhamma. And now these two yakkas are now listening to him. And now they start understanding the deep wisdom of the Buddha. Gambhira panyam nipunatta dasin. The one who is with the deep wisdom and who has the ability to see very subtle meanings. And akinchana, kama bhave asatta. Akinchana, one who has nothing. So that doesn't mean, basically doesn't have any physical thing, but mind doesn't hold anything. Mind doesn't grasp anything. Mind is fairly empty. Mind has nothing, basically. Akinchana, anadana. So these are two terms actually used for the Nibbana. Akinchana, anadana, etan deepang anaparam. Nibbana miti tam brumi jara machu parikhaya. So Buddha answers to one person, and what is Nibbana? What is the Nibbana that he is declaring? There Buddha mentioned akinchana. So basically he possesses nothing. So mind does not hold anything. Mind is not interested of holding, grasping, clinging onto anything. So as a result of that, mind is very clean, clear, empty. Anadana, there is no any clinging, grasping. So similarly here, akinchanam kama bhave asattam. So this mind, this particular person's mind is quite empty, pure, unattached. And Kama Bhave Asattam, and he doesn't have any attachment towards the sensual world. Tam Passata Sabbadi Vipamuttam. Now let's see the person who is completely liberated, completely released. Dibbe Pate Kamanang Mahesing. Kama Manang Mahesing. So the Rishi, the saint who is treading, going in the divine path. Then Anomanamang Nipunatta Dasing Panya Dadam Kamalaye Asattam. Now again some aesthetic aspect is added to this these several verses. So he is the perfect person. And it is the name, the perfect person given. And Nipunatta Dasing, the one who can see the subtle meaning, who is very, has some sharp wisdom. And Panya Dadam, so that means he is bearing, he is holding the flag of the wisdom. And he is completely unattached of the sensual pleasures. Tam Pasata Sabba Vidum Sumedam. See this wise person who has very sharp wisdom, and he's a wise person. Ariye Pate Kama Manang Mahesing, and who is path, or who is treading, walking in the noble path. Sudittang Vata No Ajja Suppa Bhatang Suhuttitang. Yang adassama sambuddhang ogatinnang anasavam. Today indeed we have had a good sight, a good morning, a good arising, since we have seen the enlightened one. One who without influxes, who has crossed the flood. Now anasavam. So anasavam is not only to the Buddha. All the arahants are considered as anasava or kinasava, who has completely free from any kind of fetters, influxes. And till one has influxes, then one is not an arahant. So here Buddha is basically recognized as another arahant, the kinasava. And he has completely crossed the auger. The auger here means the floods. The floods of defilements. Various defilements are there, so they are gushing, they are flooding our minds. So we sometimes, our minds are flooded with lust, sometimes flooded with anger, sometimes flooded with jealousy, sometimes flooded with, say, conceit. So likewise, again and again, various floods are flooding in our minds. So the one who is completely free from any influxes, he is free from all these different kinds of floods. Now, ime dasa satha yakkha iddimanto yasassino sabbetam saranam yanti tvam no satta anuttaro. Now, actually, these two yakkhas, Satagira and Hemavata, even though they are the ones talking directly to the Buddha, they haven't come alone. They came with their, say, group, their, say, retinue. And now they are explaining that dasa satha yakkha. They have 1,000 yakkhas. And they all have psychic powers, psychic potency. And what they are now going to do, they are quite happy about Buddha's answers, Buddha's association. They are quite confident, they are faithful now. And now they are going to spread the Buddha's words. So Buddha's message from place to place. Now they are telling, okay, we are going for refuge for you. Buddham saranam gacchaam. So we are now going for refuge under you, the Gautama the Buddha. All are going for refuge. It is not just Satagira and Hemavata, but the whole group is now going for refuge. And Tuan no satta anuttaro, and you are the unsurpassed teacher. Now you can see that after the discussion, they are quite convinced. They are with a lot of trust or faith. And now they are going for refuge. Te mayang vicharissama gama gamang naga nagang. Now we are going from village to village, mountain to mountain. Namassamana sambuddham. Dhammasacha sudhanna matanti. Now they are going for refuge for Buddha, Dhamma. And they are spreading the Buddha's words from village to village. From mountain to mountain. And now they are paying homage to the Buddha. And they are quite happy about Buddha's words. Now this is how this sutta ends. Basically, this Hemavata Sutta is an interesting one because it has happened not between the humans, but Buddha as a world teacher, a universal teacher. He has addressed not only humans, he has addressed sometimes the devas, sometimes yakkas, sometimes nagas, sometimes asuras. So different world levels are explained at different places of the canon. So it is not merely the humans, but various other groups, other, say, realms, beings have come and met the Buddha, and sometimes even Brahmas. Actually, nowadays, we are not that scientifically proven where these yakkas are, where these nagas are, where these Brahmas are. But it doesn't mean that we can completely deny these things, but rather we can learn from these. What they have discussed, what are the dhammas they have discussed. So through that actually we can learn, and that could be the message that we can get from this discussion. And with that, I like to conclude today's dhamma sermon, and now I like to open the session for questions.
Asaramante.
Yeah.
Today we have four questions. First question is related to the Dhamma sermon. Previous one. Dear Bhante, this is regarding Metta Sutta we have completed a few weeks ago. Bhante explained about teaching Metta Cheto Vimukti and then converting to Vipassana as one technique similar to Kayanupassana in mindfulness practice. I have been to some meditation program where metta is practiced prior to the mindfulness practice as part of the program. I doubt the participant reached the final stage of metta and start the usual vipassana practice, but rather some kind of a relaxation and preparation techniques. Appreciate Bhante's comments on adding metta as part of the regular practice considering the benefit and time limitations. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So actually, probably you have heard about the four guardian meditations, Chaturarakka Bhavana. So there are Metta, Buddhanusati, Asubha, and Marananusati are fairly recognized. So they are being practiced, and sometimes in order to calm down our mind. Now, immediately starting Anapanasati is possible when the mind is fairly relaxed, fairly calm. And then actually Anapanasati is easy to handle, easy to cultivate, develop. But on the other hand, when the mind is fairly, say, troubled with ill will, anger, then starting Anapanasati could be a little difficult. On such occasions, doing a little bit of metta, basically somewhat we can say makes the mind quite happy, which is more suitable for the meditation, because you know, in order to meditate properly, successfully, we need to have that sort of a happy mind, kind of a satisfied mind, not a distracted, not a worried, unsatisfied, a depressed kind of a mindset, but rather quite uplifted. A happy, calm, serene, lovable kind of a mind. So there's a kind of a positive effect when we have that sort of a mind. So therefore, as a kind of a preparation, if we are practicing metta, so it helps, it actually helps. So as you, by the way, mentioned, due to time constraints, so if you are spending too much time on metta, so there is something to be considered. But on the other hand, there are certain people who are quite capable of developing metta for a, say, higher level. So we don't need to really discourage that either. So we can, if we can recognize who is, have that capacity or potential to develop metta to higher levels, as we discussed, say, to the metta cheto vimutti level, if possible, complete freedom of the mind achieved through metta. So if that is possible, then actually you can start vipassana based on that. You don't need to come back and practice anapanasati even, because metta can be turned into vipassana if you have gone to a very high level. And even if you have achieved a fair amount of say samadhi through loving kindness, probably it may be a little bit of further practicing so that you can reach the, we can say, the freedom of mind, cheto vimutti, through metta. So it, we can teach that such a yogi, and then that person easily achieve that maybe within a short time. After that, he can use that as a base, that as the ground, as the kind of baseline to practice vipassana. So therefore, so that is one approach, metta using as a foundation for vipassana. But on the other hand, before practicing anapanasati, practicing a little bit of metta also has some benefits. But later, more you become confident about anapanasati, and you know how to handle the mind, how to handle various situations, probably then you can shorten the time of metta meditation. You don't need to spend many hours or many minutes practicing metta, because you know there are more deeper benefits which you can arrive through anapanasati or dhatu manasikara or vedanupassana, whatever the mindfulness techniques, satipatthana meditation. So therefore you can give more prominence to that. So till that, maybe if you are a person who is with kind of an anger temperament, probably you can practice metta. It has a lot of benefits. But later, once you are confident and already the mind is calm, quiet, happy, then it is not necessary to practice metta. You can immediately start anapanasati.
Second question out of four. This is mindful sitting question. Dear Bhante, I am new to observing thoughts after training several years on walking and sitting practice. As per Bhante's advice, I started looking at the thoughts during day-to-day activities. I still could not understand how to focus on the thoughts entirely. When I try to observe thoughts, I keep on switching back to some other bodily observations as well. Sometimes it is the posture, tightness, hot and cold, nature, etc. And then to thoughts back and forth. Due to this, I miss some observations of how thoughts arrive, stay and vanish. Is this normal or something that I have to work on so that continuous attention can be kept on the full observation of thoughts with metta? That is the end of the question.
Yeah. Actually, I hope that you may naturally grow to that level. You don't need to worry about the current situation, because I mean, these are all very strong practices, so very capable practices. We don't need to say that Chittanupassana is much stronger or much higher than Kaya Anupassana or Vedana Anupassana. Rather, each and every Anupassana, Kaya Anupassana, Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana, all are very interesting and very successful practices. So if you are spending your time in any of these four, then you are progressing. Later, probably you are automatically may inclined towards Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana, it doesn't matter. But let it happen naturally. You don't need to worry that I couldn't still do it. Still, I am automatically, say, paying attention to the body. So it doesn't matter. Later, mind slowly will understand, okay, probably, say, as your mind further refines, as your mind starts recognizing more and more freedom, so then dealing with the mind may be sort of automatic. Mind may sort of refuse to go and be with the body. So it may happen naturally. It is not that you are forcefully trying to do. Rather, mind itself will tell you, okay, now not interested of watching the body. Now not interested of watching various feelings. Rather, let me simply be with the mind. So that request may come from the mind. So at that time, you can happily allow it. And currently, you don't need to worry that you are still watching the body. So it has no harm.
Third question out of four. It is also related to mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, this is related to my earlier question on observing thoughts. Instead of observing the transient nature of thoughts cleanly with focused attention, I can observe the nature of moods created by these thoughts naturally. When a thought or a cluster of thoughts color the mind, example, with anger, greed, frustration, lust, etc., I can observe these states arising, lingering, and passing away. I can keep continuous observation on this state of mind without much effort. I don't know if this is a vipassana or mindfulness practice. Is this something I can develop as practice prior to observing individual thoughts? Much merits for your guidance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Actually, we can't immediately get into each and every individual thought. And what we first understand is the very much like the resultant, very much like a group of thoughts as a collective result. As you said, it's an emotion. But the emotion has developed after coming through series of thoughts, but still we are not capable of clearly recognizing each and every individual thought. Doesn't matter. But later, slowly, you start unentangling the whole thing. Currently, you appear, the whole thing appear like an emotion, maybe a pain, maybe a happiness. But later, you start further, say, scrutinizing, seeing more detail. So that is where the clear comprehension improves, so that you can see all subtle details. But this will happen as you progress. Then you have the capacity to see individual thoughts, and it may become possible. Currently, I mean, doesn't matter. I mean, if you are still recognizing them as emotions, simply look at it. Try to understand how they are changing, how they are appearing, how they are disappearing, as a result of your attention, how they start dissolving. All these things now you are carefully observing. So slowly, slowly, your mind become more and more relaxed, more and more calm. It starts enjoying the clarity. It may even enjoy the absence of emotions, absence of even thoughts. So that is where you are finding a kind of a space. Now you have kind of a spacious mind. It doesn't have any stains. It doesn't have any perceptions. It doesn't have any colors. It doesn't have any emotions. It's a kind of a very empty, clean, clear kind of a state of mind. So when you are more and more familiar with it, then recognizing thoughts or very subtle refinements would be possible. So it's a kind of a progressive kind of stages. So you may encounter that in the future. So nothing to worry. Simply you can continue your practice.
Fourth question out of five. It is related to mindful walking. Venerable Sir, my walking practice start focus on the sole of the foot with the noting left and right. How the pressure spread across the sole, hard and some smoothness when the foot is on the floor, hot and cold patches along the sole, and the movements are some of the sensations that I observe. After a few rounds, the working process starts to happen automatically and the nodding naturally stops. During the last practice session, the sensations become blurred but started breaking down into small bits. I could feel thousands of small bits of these sensations across the soul while walking, appearing and disappearing. These tiny sensations remain blurred or bleached until the foot touches the ground. They seem to convert to hard at one end and soft at the opposite end, giving the notion of foot touching the ground. I could not distinguish which one is touching, which one the foot or the ground. Just many tiny sensations appearing and disappearing. This observation lasted until the session ends. Thoughts of reporting to Venerable Sir with metta. That is the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, very good. So this is how we have to progress. Yeah, at the beginning, we have a lot of conventional terms like left, right, say lifting, moving, placing. This is the ankle. This is the toes. So these are all traditional conventional terms, but later, now we can't recognize any of these. Our mind is more focused on understanding these subtle sensations. Now we can't even recognize where it is, but some sensations are there. And you can't even name them, whether it is a little painful sensation or a pleasurable sensation, equanimous sensation. You can't even name. And you can't even know, where exactly it happened. Those labels are now dropped. I mean, that is how we are progressing. So that is, this is a progress. Don't think that getting less names, less labels is a reduction of mindfulness. Rather, less names, less labels is a kind of a progress in meditation, progress in vipassana. We are now, the mind is fairly more attentive about these subtle sensations and observing their true behavior. Now encourage the mind to see each and every these subtle sensations, these minute sensations, how they are behaving. Now you are doing a very close examination, like a scientist. Now you are doing a very close examination how each and every subtle sensation behaves. So this behavior, more and more you are observing. Now, internally, you are developing kind of an insight. You are developing kind of a wisdom. So that is how actually the true wisdom has to happen. Based on this sort of a very unbiased, attentive, very relaxed kind of an observation, lead to develop a very strong wisdom within ourselves. It may happen, maybe we can say, in our deep unconscious levels. So that is how actually now it may later affect ourselves, to even to make kind of behavioral changes in ourselves, habitual changes in ourselves, and complete change in our life. So therefore, what you are doing, what you are experiencing is quite valid. So you may continue your practice.
Last question, Bhante.
Yeah.
It's a general question. Dear Bhante, if time permits, can you explain a bit how samatha comes first and then converting the practice to vipassana happens? Heard this is termed as Ugananda method.
Mm-hmm.
That is the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it is not the Ugananda. It is called the samatha pubbangam vipassana, where you practice samatha to higher levels, to a very higher level, and you may even achieve the complete freedom of mind through samatha, and then you start practicing vipassana. So this is samatha pubbangama vipassana. So you first develop a fair amount of samatha, and then you start practicing vipassana. Yugananda is where you are taking both in parallel. You do a little bit of samatha, and then you practice vipassana. Again, you do a little bit of samatha, again do vipassana. You are taking both hand in hand. So that is Yugananda. Say if you are practicing Satipatthana, probably you can even try that, say at the beginning, say you are practicing Anapanasati. Probably you can't immediately say that you are practicing Vipassana. Currently you are simply trying to be aware of whether it is the in-breath, whether it is the out-breath. Sato Asa Sati, Sato Passa Sati. And then you are trying to see whether it is long, whether it is short. Still we can say a fair amount of Samatha. But later, that information will turn, as we discussed in the previous question, to a very subtle detail where you can't label, where you can't name. Now you, what you perceive is very much the very primary characteristics, element characteristics. Now you are trying to see what happened to those element characteristics. Now you are practicing Vipassana. So likewise, you can take both together. And if again, while you are observing that, if your mind distracted, now you can again go back to Samatha. Again, you can little bit happy about the practice. You can focus your attention. Again, you can switch to Vipassana. So this is how you are practicing both together. But what we have discussed with respect to metta is actually the practicing metta to a higher level, that is purely on the samatha ground, and then switching to Vipassana.
That was the last question, Bhante.
Right.
We have another half an hour. Is it okay to open the session for the audience?
Sure, yeah.
If you have any questions, please raise hands, then I will unmute.
Can I ask a question, please, Bhante?
Yes.
What is the difference between karma guna and karma, please?
Karma guna and karma.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Actually, these two terms are very close as far as I can see. Karma guna. I think karma guna may be the... I need to check to give you a very precise answer. I'm just giving answer through my memory. Karma guna. Maybe sight, sound, smell, taste. So they are referred as the, our mind get attached to them. Our mind get involved with them. And they are pleasing to see, pleasing to experience. So they are called karma guna. So that is the beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, fragrances, a delicious taste. Comfortable contacts, tangibles. So these are referred as karma guna. But the karma is a kind of a broader term which can include many things. Not only the sight, sound, smell, taste, but even the money, even the fame, even the status. So all these can include in the karma. So all the sense-related, sensual world-related, our mind get attached, and all these can be included under the karma. Karma, we can say, is a more broader term.
Mm-hmm. Another question I have is, Bhante, is it wrong to advise a very close relative if they are breaking the five precepts, one of the five precepts, mm-hmm. is it okay to advise them? Does it make me doing anything wrong or just?
No, not definitely. I mean, you can definitely advise, because if you very well know that he is breaking a precept, so as a Kalyana Mitta, you can try to advise, you can try to convince that you are doing something wrong, it will be harmful to you, harmful to another person. Why don't you correct yourself? It may be you have to do it in a more diplomatic, more calm, relaxed kind way, without hurting the person, but convincing him, make him more, say, knowledgeable, more aware of the situation. So you are explaining the gravity of the problem. So likewise, you can try to convince him, teach him. So definitely that will be something that we can do.
Yeah, but at the same time, you shouldn't get affected, isn't it?
Yeah, that is definitely
where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So, if you are maintaining the precept, and then only you can actually advise. Proper advice. Yeah.
What I meant was, rather than me getting angry about it, I should advise the person without me affecting in that manner. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm angry about another person, that's correct, isn't it? I should be very calm.
That's why. Yeah, definitely. Exactly. So that's why when we are advising, when we are admonishing another person, so we have to maintain our kind of a calm mental state. That is something Buddha also mentioned. So if you are accusing someone, or if you are trying to point out a problem, point out their shortcoming, so first of all, you need to relax, you need to calm down. You should make sure that you are not addressing that person with anger, rather with some amount of compassion, so that you have the real intention to correct him. So that is the kind of a correct attitude we have to have, rather than criticizing the person. So this correct attitude, if we have, then we are not getting into trouble. Even if we refuse, we are not troubled, because we just tried as an honest, as a good Kalyana Mitra. So we just tried our best. So if it is up to that person to accept it or reject it.
Okay. And also, if he doesn't listen, then I can be happy that I have done my utmost and it is his karma. Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that's why, I mean, we can try. We can try to convince. We can try to make him aware about the gravity of what he's doing. But still he is not listening to us. I mean, we can try various ways as a good person. Say, for example, your son, your daughter is doing something wrong. So as a mother, you have kind of a feeling, you have kind of an obligation. Okay, I need to show him the path. Now you are with the motherly love, you with compassion, you are now trying to teach the child so that he will understand. And if not, still it doesn't mean that I start hating him, but I am just, anyway, I am continuing my way. Probably in the future, he may understand. So we don't need to start hating or something, but rather, as you mentioned, yes, I have done my part. I have tried my best to teach him, but unfortunately, he couldn't understand my word. What to do?
But it shouldn't affect myself. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yes, because
I shouldn't worry. It shouldn't affect my mentality. Mm. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Teruvan Sannai.
Any more questions for the Bhante? Seems I can't see any raised hands. So we come to the end of the program. I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also, we would like to pass our merits to everyone, both seen and unseen, who are enabling this program. And we pass our merits to all participants for joining the program. With that, I would like to conclude the program today. Teruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai.